Welcome to the Frank Reactions podcast. My name is Tema Frank, and I'm your host. Today we have a really interesting interview because, unlike so many of the others that are from a very high level, I mean, often on this show we're talking with experts, researchers, consultants, or the very senior executives in organizations, all of whom have great opinions and important views. This time I was speaking to somebody who is one step removed from the production line. So this guy is a supervisor and has been through a transition in his organization, going from a role that was initially very much all about firefighting to one that's now about continuous improvement. One of the most important things you can do to help improve the experiences customers have with your products and services is to actually listen to the people who are on the front lines, the people who are the closest to actual interaction with those customers, and if you're producing something, the people who are doing the actual production, to find ways to do it better. That's why we sometimes get into a bit of a blend between customer experience work, which may be in some organizations it's part of marketing, in some it's part of IT, but it can also really reach right down onto the manufacturing floor. And today's episode discusses that aspect of things. Unfortunately, the sound quality is not as great as it should be, but in this interview and a couple of the others I've got coming up for you, I really encourage you to stick with it anyway. It is worth it because the content is fantastic. They've got really interesting things to say. So please bear with us and enjoy the interview.
My name is Brian Penzum. I'm the manufacturing supervisor at Lakeshore Cryotronics in Westerville, Ohio.
And how long have you worked there, Brian?
I've been here 6 years.
Okay. And did you start in a supervisory role there?
No. When I started at Lakeshore, I was in the I was a technician in the hall calibration department, calibrating our hall sensor probes, and moved into a lead position in the instrument department from there. Okay. After about a year after that, then I was put into the supervisor role from the lead role.
How big is the company in terms of numbers of employees?
We have approximately, I want to say, 160 employees right now.
Is the company one that's been around a long time, or what's its history?
Yeah, Lakeshore was founded here in Westerville in 1969 by Dr. John Swartz.
Okay.
Started it in his garage and in his basement, and has grown it from there.
Is it still family owned?
Yes.
Okay. And then the unit or units that you supervise, how many people would that be?
I directly supervise about 19.
Okay. When you were moving into a supervisory role, did you have any kind of special training for that? What was your background for that?
Well, my background really had very little in the way of supervisory experience moving into the role here at Lakeshore. I come from a technical background. My previous job had been circuit board repair for about 8 years before that, and not really working in any kind of a supervisory capacity to that point. The most supervisory experience I had was in retail when I was in my early 20s.
Right.
So I wasn't 100% sure what to expect in a more manufacturing environment, and supervising a lot of the people who I had worked side by side with. So, I had some management training classes offered by some professional training companies. But other than that, a lot of it was learn on the job.
What was hardest for you in learning to be a good supervisor?
The hardest part, and I think this would go for anybody that's promoted up through the ranks, is supervising the people that you used to work alongside.
Right.
That really, was sort of a challenge because, you do have people that kind of look at you and go, why was he promoted? Mm-hmm. Why wasn't I? Or why wasn't this person? And, it becomes hard to sort of differentiate yourself from, before we could talk and say whatever we wanted, but now things are a little bit different.
Right.
So that was the most immediate challenge that I saw. I think the second biggest one was, now I'm in charge of all these people, and I'm in charge of these departments, and I'm in charge of scheduling and resource allocation and all that. And it's very, can be very overwhelming for somebody coming into a relatively green.
Yeah. So how did you establish your authority then with these former peers?
My philosophy, and I think this is, it's kind of a neat way that I look at things, was I want to manage manage people the way that I would want to be managed. And it's very similar to, you know, how we're, my wife and I are raising our child, is we want to be the kind of parents that we would have wanted growing up.
Right.
And, you know, learning, you know, not to equate my reports to a child, but,
right.
you know, you want, you've been in the position where you've had a supervisor, you've had parents that, you know, you don't want to be a certain way. You know how you want to be. So, I wanted to be very, I guess, hands-off.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to micromanage anybody. I don't want to be the kind of person who's hovering over your shoulder, you know, asking, when's this one? Yeah, you need to get this done. You need to get this done. You know, I basically looked at it from the point of view of, you know, we're all adults. I'm going to tell you what I expect from you. I'm going to tell you when I expect it. And it's up to you to get that done. You know, if you don't get that done, then, you know, we'll take some sort of a corrective action. We'll talk about it and figure out why you didn't. If there's something that's missing, you need more tools, you need more time, you know, what is it that caused you not to be able to do this? And then fix it, because every single person reacts differently to how you, to how you interact with them. So if you have 15 direct reports, you've got to learn how to deal with 15 different kinds of personalities.
Right.
So, you know, when I really started, it was first getting to know everybody, getting to know how they work, what do they respond to, what do they not respond to,
mm-hmm.
and then learning that, and then, you know, not necessarily treating each person completely differently, but tailoring your interactions to, you know, you can ask this person to get something done, and it'll be done before you can even blink.
Right.
Or you can tell this person to get something done and explain to them why it's needed so quickly. So it's more of a, you know, you got to understand why we need it instead of just do it. I don't like to tell
right.
people to do anything. I like to let them work on it, let them understand that it's something that's needed, and you understand why I expect something.
Now, was that management approach different from the person who had been leading before you?
I think that it really was. While the person who was originally in the position I was in, I reported to her. I wasn't in the really in the departments that required the most kind of supervision. But, you know, a lot of the processes and ways that I was doing scheduling were very, very different than how they were done before, which isn't to say they were wrong, but I prefer a much more visual kind of scheduling.
Okay.
Or a, you know, I want to be able to see things. I want to be able to measure things. I want to be able to say, you know, I know that I have X amount of capacity and I have Y amount of work and here's how we're going to need to do this, instead of just assigning work and just letting it pile up. Then you realize you're in trouble at the end of the week and you realize, hey, there's no way we could have made these dates.
Right. You're talking about different processes in how you approach things. What were some of the issues then in terms of figuring out what approaches would work both for you and for your team?
Going from the firefighting, the running around and fixing all the little problems, like from a frontline manager's standpoint, to having those problems, you know, more or less fixed by the people who are, you know, on the absolute front lines, the assemblers, the technicians, the engineers, which would allow people like me to then identify more processes that needed to be changed, whether it was creating a visual scheduling board, whether it was identifying different training opportunities for people that, you know, even though they've been in this position for, you know, 10, 15 years, that there was something that could have been utilizing their skills a lot better,
right.
Getting them trained to either cross-train into a different department or, even something as simple as getting people new tools and looking at the way things have been done and asking questions about why are we doing it this way?
Right.
You know, sometimes you get into a routine, and there might be a better way to do things, and you don't see it because you become blind to something that's right in front of you every single day.
Right. So how did people react to that when you start asking that why question about things they've been doing a certain way for a long time?
Sometimes, I mean, it was actually really interesting. Sometimes you get, that's just the way it's always been done. You know, why aren't you asking that? Sometimes you got that, well, I don't know. I mean, it's the way I was taught how to do it. I mean, it was. It was really interesting. Sometimes you'd see that light just go on in their heads and say, well, gosh, I can... I don't need to do it that way. I can do it totally differently. I was part of a Greenbelt project team, and we were looking at different steps in our quality control portion of our calibration steps. Our idea was to shorten the time for QC from, you know, it's usually maybe a day and a half or so, trying to see how much time we could cut out of there by eliminating redundant or non-value added steps. Mm-hmm. And we identified a few of these that had been done for, you know, maybe the past 15 years. And then when we go to the, you know, design engineers and the, you know, metrology department and ask, well, why is it done? And they said, well, you know, back at the beginning, there was, you know, there were some problems and, you know, we fixed the problems. We've been doing this for another 10 years. Have we ever seen that fail? No, we haven't seen that fail in 10 years. So, you know, so then we were asking, well, then why are we doing this? And it was one of those, well, that's just the way it's always been done.
Yep.
You got a group of people in there that weren't dealing with that every single day. And you start identifying these issues that it just makes sense. You go, well, think how much time we've wasted over the past 10 years doing these tests and running these calibrations on here when it's something that isn't needed. We identified a couple of what ended up being relatively low-hanging fruit to change.
So when you start, let's say you've taken over a department and you want to start finding some of these redundant processes, how do you even begin to approach that? Do you start by talking to the staff who are actually doing the manufacturing and asking them what they think are some areas that could be improved, or what do you do?
Sure. I think the people who are going to know best what needs to be improved are going to be the people that do it every day.
Sure.
They're going to know what the issues are that they face from a manufacturing standpoint. You're going to go to the person that is assembling the unit and saying, you know, what can be done to make your job easier?
Okay.
I mean, everybody, no matter what job you're in, you want your job to be as easy as possible.
Right.
I mean, that's a given. So they're going to start coming up with ideas, and they're going to say, well, you know, I've always thought that if I could just do this, or if I had, you know, this kind of a fixture, or if, you know, my desk was a foot longer, I wouldn't have to. There were so many different ideas that came up, so many different just really good changes, and a lot of the time it wasn't anything major. It was something very, very small that can make somebody's job a lot easier. And if the job's easier, the person's going to be happier. The happier a person is, the better job they're going to do. And that's the fact that you're just asking.
Yeah.
Usually, you know, you get kind of that sideways look, like, why are you asking me? Because they don't typically ask. You know, you're like, what's going on? Why? Why do you want to know?
So why do you think people don't typically ask that? What's the barrier there?
I think the barrier is just it's complacency. Like, you know, like I said, you get into a routine and you do the same things the same way every single day. It's not something you think about. You don't think about the continuous improvement of something. You think everything's good. It's going well. I don't need to change anything because it is going well. When
right.
in reality, it can always be better. I mean, no matter what you're doing, you can always do it better.
Mm-hmm.
And the hardest thing to do is recognize that just because you think you're doing a good job doesn't mean that job can be done better.
Right. Yeah. What do you do to maintain this approach of continuous improvement then? So you make a bunch of changes, things get better, then what?
Keeping the momentum going is definitely something, and I've run into that myself here. I mean, we made sweeping changes to a lot of different things with a lot of employee input, and, you know, having we have daily huddles to talk about, you know, things going on in the department, needs, whether we have shortages on the floor that we need to talk to logistics or the supply chain about. But, you know, after a while, it becomes a little bit, I don't want to use the word stale, but it becomes a little stagnant.
Right.
So, you know, every once in a while, it does require some, I don't know, maybe a little bit of prodding to get everybody back onto that, you know, onto the train of, you know, let's continuously improve things. The approach that I've tried taking is after things, you know, maybe you feel like things have become a little bit stagnant, you start asking a lot more questions about the process of how you're doing things now and how things used to be done. And, you know, now that you've been doing this for 6-8 months, you know, with this new tool or new process or whatever, what are you finding? Are you finding that it's easier? Are you finding that it's about the same? Are you finding that it needs a little bit more tweaking to get even better? So asking asking about the changes and then asking if there need to be changes to those changes.
Yeah, okay.
Again, you're getting used to a new process.
Yeah.
And you need to keep going with that. And I mean, I'm not going to lie. It is difficult to improve continuously. It's a hard thing to do. It's really easy to get started, to make a couple of changes and feel like you won.
Okay.
But you're not. You don't win. It's an ongoing battle, and there's always going to be something that can change, and then you get a creative gust of ideas coming out of people that may have been quiet for the past year.
Hmm.
They all of a sudden have some really good ideas and really good improvements that can be made. And I've run into this over the past couple of weeks with one of my employees. It's usually very quiet and easygoing and just, you know, whatever you say I need is what I need, and I'll make do with what I have. Well, he came up with a couple of, like, just absolutely mind-blowingly fantastic ideas that were not only inexpensive, but will pay for themselves in the course of, you know, a month.
Wow.
It was that much time saving.
What do you think motivated him to bring that up now?
Well, he's, you know, it's been a very busy first, past 3 months.
Okay.
And he's been getting more and more work. So he's been, you know, expected to do more, in the same amount of time that he had been given before. So
mm-hmm.
he was starting to identify these things that took a lot of time that he didn't see the value in.
Right.
And while there was value in the process that he was doing, there was a much better and faster way to do it. We run voltage checks on all of our instruments because they're manufactured in-house.
Mm-hmm.
He had an old, you know, 30, 40-year-old instrument that he would have to set the voltage on from 100 to 120 to 220 to 240.
Mm-hmm.
And that required, you know, turning these knobs and fine-tuning it. And he said, well, isn't there something out there that just puts out these voltages? And I said, yeah, there is. And he said, why don't I have one? And I was like, I'm going to buy you one right now. So I literally went online. Found one on Amazon, bought it, had it 2 days later. We plugged it in, had our engineers go and look at it and said, yeah, this is exactly the same as that. Just, it puts out all of those voltages without having to do anything.
Technology has improved in 30 or 40 years.
Yeah, just a little bit. So, you know, so instead of taking, you know, really what equated to about a minute and a half per instrument, which doesn't sound like a whole lot, except when, you know, you're doing 50, 60 instruments a day.
Right.
The unit cost, I think, $25. I mean, it went from about a minute a piece to maybe 10 seconds a piece.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, so it saved them a ton. And right before I was talking to you today, I was talking to him, and he says, this is the highlight of my week using this thing. He says, it's just so much easier.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, that's great. So not only does he have one now, but all of our assemblers have one now. So they can check, they can run the checks themselves when they're assembling.
Yep.
And then there could be a final check done at the calibration step, which, you know, not only is it going to save him time, but it's going to improve our quality because it's going to be checked in multiple places.
Right. And it's
so
quicker
very,
for
him. Very easy fix. I mean, like you said, $25 a piece for something that, you know, for years and years and years, we've always used that other one. How much money over the course of, you know, those years could we have saved?
Right. And that is a perfect example of the kind of thing that you really need somebody who's on the front line working with it every day to even be aware of it as an issue.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because you see it, you know it's a part of the process, but you don't realize that, you know, that is a time sink. You're spending a lot of time on that when you could be spending your time doing something a little bit more value-added.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I would imagine, too, that over time, as people see that you're actually acting on their suggestions, it makes others more likely or more willing to bring up suggestions.
Right. At the beginning of this entire process, when we first got into the whole continuous improvement mindset,
mm-hmm.
that was really one of the things that we wanted to do, was to get a couple of quick wins.
Yeah.
Which, over the, you know, in the past, people hadn't asked, you know, what can we do to improve this? Does anybody have any ideas? Or if they did, they weren't always acted on, and especially not acted on as quickly as some of these were. So what you know, what I had done was, you know, ask people for ideas. And in the morning huddle, you know, an idea came up again. And it's funny because sometimes the best ideas you get are from the people you would least expect it from.
Mm-hmm.
But I got an idea brought up by somebody who normally doesn't offer up ideas and, you know, is a great worker, but just isn't one of those that says, hey, let's do this, let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, if I had a flashlight, not really a flashlight, but like a light bar that had a magnet on it,
mm-hmm.
I could work on building these consoles a lot better because I'd be able to see what I was doing inside of there.
Right.
Well, over the past 10 years, you know, people just used the light from the, you know, from the manufacturing floor to work inside of those. And everybody's kind of like said, that would be a great idea. Yeah, can we get that? So as soon as the huddle was over, went across the street to Home Depot, bought a few of them, brought them back, and, I mean, said, here, what do you think of this? He said, this is a fantastic idea. You know, stuck one of those inside and was working. I mean, so this is a huge, huge improvement. And even people that had been doing that again for 15 years said, this is great. Why did we never think? So that kind of opened the floodgates, especially at the beginning, to, you know, for people to say, yes, that's, you know, if I come up with an idea, they're going to consider it. I mean, it's not just going to say, right. Oh, yeah, that's a great idea, and then just kind of brush it aside. And granted, everything's not going to happen as quickly as that, but I knew that the ability to take care of it that day, you know, existed. So now someone has an idea, someone says, you know, my job would be a lot easier if I had this tool. Well, you know what? I'm going to buy that tool for you. I mean, $50 for a tool, if that's going to make your job easier, it's going to pay for itself almost immediately.
Right.
So, you know, people are a lot more apt to offer up ideas after they see that you care and they see that you're willing to try.
Yes.
At least try what they're asking.
Have you ever been in a situation where somebody brings up an idea that would make their job easier to accomplish, but at the same time would make somebody else's job more difficult? And if so, how do you deal with that?
Well, yeah, I mean, anytime somebody offers up a process improvement, you know, saying, well, you know, why do I need to do this part? Why can't that be done by this person? You know, you have to consider, would it make your job easier and make the other person's job harder equally? If so, then you're just shifting work from one person to another.
Right.
That's not necessarily fair, but if you're doing some task and then you want some other person to do that task, but it makes more sense for them to do it because either, you know, the top panel is off of the unit, so you know, they don't have to remove it, so they can get in there and they can tweak the pots, so they can, you know, flip the switches or whatever.
Yep.
Then it might make more sense to change that process, to say, okay, you're going to be doing that instead of the person that used to do it because you're upstream from them, or, you know, these panels haven't been put on yet, so you have easier access to it. I've definitely run into that where, you know, on the surface, it might seem like it's a self-serving or something. We'll take this work away from you, make them do it. But sometimes it's usually based in some sort of a true process improvement. I don't agree with just moving around work for the sake of moving it around. But if there's a reason to, if there's a definite improvement to the flow, then I'm all for that. And again, I have a really good example of that. And this is another one that was brought up by Fred, who is the one that came up with the power adapter idea.
Yep.
So basically, when our instruments are built, they had been always built in the past with, we'd leave the top covers off.
Mm-hmm.
And the top covers would be off, the instrument would get calibrated, and then after it was calibrated, we put the top covers on.
Yep.
There's usually, I think, I want to say about four or five screws that hold the top covers in. Well, he had brought up in one of the huddles that, you know, it takes him, maybe a minute, 2 minutes to put the top covers on after he calibrates them. He said, would it make more sense to have the assemblers put the top covers on? And the assemblers obviously were not thrilled with that idea. But it didn't make any sense for them not to be put on there because there was nothing that got done after it left the assembler's hands into the calibrator's hands that required the top covers to be off.
Right.
So, you know, we talked it over. We kind of looked at how long it would take for them to do, having all of the tools right there at their disposal. They're already putting the bottom panels on, which are the exact same thing as the top panels.
Right.
So So we met with the assemblers, met with the calibrator, met with the manufacturing engineer, and decided, you know, when you're assembling it, we're now making a part of the assembly, putting the top cover on. It ended up saving the calibrator time.
Yeah.
And it took less time for the assemblers to put that top cover on because it's, you know, they're already set up to do this. They just assembled the entire unit.
Mm-hmm.
They can put one more piece on and take less time than the calibrators. So that freed up the calibration technician to spend more time calibrating and less time turning a screwdriver.
Right. So that kind of brings me to the next question I was going to ask, which is what happens when something in one of the departments that you supervise is going to have an impact on other areas of the organization, and how do you get their buy-in?
The easiest way to get buy-in is to show data, is to be able to measure what impact you're planning on doing now, positive or negative. I mean, even if it's going to adversely affect someone else's department, you have to be able to say, here's the reason. As long as there's a net gain in the changes that you're making, We're all here for the same reason, which is to ensure the success of Lakeshore.
Yep.
So while, I'm not going to make a process change that's going to absolutely cripple a different department, because that's going to be counterproductive.
Right.
But if something, adds a little bit of, maybe a little bit of stress to a different department, sometimes that's necessary, and that is going to spur people to think more about, well, how can we improve that?
Mm-hmm.
So you're not gonna spend time improving a process you think works perfectly. So I'm gonna say let's try this. Get another supervisor or manager's opinion. Say, well, what about this? Meet at some sort of a compromise, and then go from there to try to improve it beyond that. Whether that's cross training somebody else or having other people kind of chip in the different departments.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other comments that you've got on this process? I mean, it sounds like you really have been able to move much more towards Ray's sort of run, improve, grow thing. So you've got your frontline people doing the work who are doing the run. You have become very much focused on the improvement side of things. And so that has ideally, presumably, change the nature of the work being done by the people that you report to as well. Do you see that?
I absolutely see that. And I think a lot of the people, I mean, if not all of the people that I supervise, and I mean, I could even go out and speak for a lot of the people on the manufacturing floor in general.
Mm-hmm.
Since we worked with Definity and Ray's group to focus on the Run, Improve, Grow program, everybody feels a lot more empowered. There's a lot more accountability for coming up with ideas. I mean, we are constantly prodding for ideas from the floor. And like I said before, when people are happy to give ideas and see that there's some action on them, whether it's they're actually completed or not, they're more apt to take ownership of the processes that they're working on.
Yep.
And make them as good as possible, and it becomes more of a part of their life than just a job that you go in and you clock in and you clock out of.
Right.
You want to see it, and people here are really proud of the changes that have been made from a process standpoint, from a floor layout standpoint. Nothing's done in a vacuum anymore. Nothing's just, the decisions aren't made by management and said, okay, here's what we're going to do, here's what's going to change. We're going to the people that are doing the job and saying, what do you think needs to change?
Mm-hmm.
Where should, let's reorganize the department, from a layout standpoint. What would make sense? Well, I'm going from here to here all the time, and, it's tough to wheel this cart between here. Can we move it over, so it's a little bit easier? And that's something that I wouldn't know, and something my boss wouldn't know, because we're not the ones wheeling the cart around.
Yeah.
So involving people and getting... It really starts with buy-in, and I'll never forget what I said on the day, the day one of starting to do all this work. Everybody was obviously really, they had their doubts that any of this stuff was going to work.
Right.
And I stood up in front of them and I said, look, I know a lot of you guys are questioning this and don't think it's going to work, and I don't know if it's going to either. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to go in there and I'm going to jump in head first. And we're going, you know, let's do the best that we can do. And if it works, we're going to be a lot better off. And if it doesn't, it doesn't work. I mean, it's,
yeah.
It's basically, it's either going to work or it's not going to work. But it's not going to work if you don't try. So all I'm going to ask you is to try. Try your hardest at this and let's see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people, they kind of felt my enthusiasm for it. And I really love, I love working on change. I love, you know, taking a process and making it better. And I've always liked doing that in my career. And honestly, the process hadn't really changed a lot in years.
Mm-hmm. Now, are there, I know in some organizations, at least the perception is that middle managers are actually scared of making this kind of change, that it will change their role in a way that they're uncomfortable with. Did you see anything like that in your organization?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, change for anybody. I mean, whether you love change or hate change, change is scary because you don't know what's going to happen on the backside of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's very easy for management, somebody like me, to look at it and say, well, if all these process improvements work and all this stuff, I'm going to improve myself out of a job.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a very real fear for people to have. But then as things start changing, your role definitely does change. And my role has completely changed from what I was before to what I'm doing now. But it changes and it evolves. It evolves with the improvements that you make. There's always going to be something new for you to analyze. There's going to be something new for you to handle.
Yeah.
Regardless of if your title changes or if, you know, your responsibilities change, there's always going to be something new.
Well, and if the change is making the company more successful, then you're not likely doing yourself out of a job because there are new opportunities.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And that's really how I feel. And, you know, I feel like I'm doing more work now than I did before, but I feel like the work that I'm doing now has a bigger impact than it did before.
Okay.
I'm focusing my time more at the correct things than running around and putting out fires like I feel like I was doing before.
Right. So it's much less frustrating.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Is there anything else that you'd like to comment on or that I should have asked you and I haven't?
When I think back to the jobs that I had before, where any ideas you would come up with get shot down so quickly, that's like the most demoralizing thing you can do to an employee is for somebody to take the time and come to you and say, I have an idea, here's my idea, you know, whether they've worked out the details or not, and then to just say, no, we're not doing that.
Right.
I mean, that, you just go, okay, well then I'm not going to give you any more ideas.
Yep.
I mean, I'll come in, I'll do my job, I'll do what you pay me for, but that's it.
Right. So a couple of things that I think are worth pulling out of that interview. One is the importance of asking why. Why do we do things a particular way? A second one is using metrics and data to help you both identify where there might be problem areas or areas where there's room for improvement, but also to measure and demonstrate the success you're achieving to help get buy-in and help further the process. And thirdly, looking for the quick win, looking for ways that you can show people right from the beginning of this process that, yes, you are interested in what they have to suggest and that you really do want to make changes that make their lives better. And that by doing that, they become much more engaged in their work, the quality improves, the organization profits. That's all for today's episode. If you have any feedback, I'd really appreciate it. You can always reach me, Tema, T-E-M as in marketing, A, at frankreactions.com. You can call me toll-free, 1-866-544-9262. You can follow me on Twitter, simply at Tema Frank, or on LinkedIn or your other standard social media outlets. Thank you so much, and I will chat with you again in 2 weeks.